Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Steve Bannon made a career as a voice for the anti-establishment. Now he's senior White House counselor and chief strategist for President Donald Trump. A new frontline looks at Steve Bannon, his history, his worldview, and his role in the power struggles and policy clashes inside the White House. For Frontline's Bannon's War, producers drew on nearly 30 in-depth interviews with political insiders, Bannon's former associates at Breitbart, authors, and journalists. It tells the story of one man's quest to transform America. You can see it tonight on SDPB-TV at 9 Central, 8 Mountain. And joining us today to talk about Bannon's War, producer Gabrielle Schonder. Gabrielle, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
The situation, the news out of the White House changes every day, and maybe even Steve Bannon's role might change on a daily basis. How did you approach, producing something that was timely and wouldn't be out of date the second it aired?
Yeah, it's a great question. We run the risk in this news cycle of effectively, most stories not having a shelf life of longer than, 24 hours or 12 hours. And so we sort of thought, wait a second, let's take a step back. Let's approach Steve Bannon as though we were approaching in one of our last projects the biographies of our two presidential candidates, and let's do a full sort of examination of his life and certainly his entering the political arena, because he's had just a meteoric rise since he began working within politics.
And unlike Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, I think most of us, it's safe to say, knew far less about who Steve Bannon was in his early years. What did you find out about this person that we hear his name a lot now, but 20 years ago maybe did not?
Sure. So, we had a pretty unique opportunity, which was to examine Steve Bannon's filmmaking career. So Steve Bannon made political documentaries for many years. One of his first films was on his political hero, Ronald Reagan. He would go on to produce films about Michelle Bachmann and ultimately Sarah Palin. So that was sort of a pretty unique opportunity as filmmakers ourselves to see what he was drawn to, what imagery, what storytelling. It's an interesting perspective on a very dramatic, very sort of fear-mongering type of narrative.
So let's talk about some of those films and step a tiny bit back in time and say what inspired, what are sort of the events that inspire that worldview that shows up in a film like his film on Ronald Reagan, In the Face of Evil? Where does that come from?
Well, he really does believe that we are at war with radical Islamic terrorism, and that the daily assault is something that puts our sort of contemporary culture on strict sort of notice, and it's a pretty scary sort of good and evil. There's a bit of imagery in that film that Steve develops around this idea of the beast, and the beast represents communism. It represented all evils of the world, and the coda of that film, you see this transition. You see sort of the end of the Cold War. The Berlin Wall comes down. There's people praying. Then a coda rises, and suddenly, there's this incredibly graphic imagery of the attack in 9/11, and you see people jumping to their deaths. And the narration is that the beast still lives, and suddenly we see hundreds of Muslims praying. And it seems very clear that to Steve Bannon, that beast is sort of the Muslim community.
How does he get? How does he end up in Hollywood in the first place?
He doesn't
begin there, and then he ends up making these films about Ronald Reagan, Sarah Palin, and others.
Yeah, so he actually is working within Goldman Sachs, and so he moves to the West Coast with Goldman Sachs, and he is structuring different entertainment deals out there, and that slowly turns into him eventually leaving the bank, creating his own financing company, and then ultimately he's got a taste for producing and directing and really editing his own works, and he makes that transition from sort of financing and the back end of filmmaking to actually crafting, creating, writing, and he's very involved in the structures of these films.
But not is he connected with the sort of Hollywood elite? Is he disconnected from that? Does he have a worldview, just documentary films, or does he take a creative approach?
Sure. So it's a very small community in Hollywood that is made up of conservative filmmakers. And right. he at a screening of In the Face of Evil, the Reagan film, meets Andrew Breitbart and connects to really Andrew Breitbart's community of sort of conservatives in Hollywood. And from there, the two partner up and obviously transform Breitbart News from a conservative Hollywood voice to really fixating on Washington power politics.
Hmm. How does Steve Bannon change Breitbart after the news organization or the online organization after the death of Andrew Breitbart? How does Bannon step into that role and shift the narrative?
Well, he infuses an incredible amount of money, first off, from private investors, including the Mercer family, and then very quickly realizes that there's quite an opportunity to build out a media empire, a new conservative media empire, but it's going to require relocating to Washington and really sort of doubling down on Beltway coverage. And so Bannon creates an office in a townhouse right behind the Supreme Court building that they named the Breitbart Embassy. And from there, with a team of maybe about a dozen staffers, all under the age of 30, Steve Bannon sort of creates this sort of powerhouse of reporters and constant sort of content creation that's speaking to a part of the GOP that really hadn't seen such a media organization reflect their views.
And that's interesting to me as far as, you know, once again, he's an outsider in Hollywood and really relishes that role, and then an outsider even within the Republican Party. And then all these young people, these young, bright minds that come and sort of gather around him as a mentor. What do, you know, people say about what it's like to have a conversation with him? What kind of thinker is he? Is he a reader? Is he, you know, what are his habits?
You know, he gives off the persona of a college professor. He's an avid reader. He's very charming. He's very educated. But there's something a little bit sort of messy about him, right? Messy about his personality. We have this great sort of account in the film in which one of his co-writers on In the Face of Evil describes him sort of sleeping at night just on a bed full of books. That this is a guy who just, is really obsessive about history and obsessive about reading.
Hmm. Why doesn't he run for office himself? It seems like he's sort of looking for a candidate, from admiring Ronald Reagan to sort of pressing Sarah Palin, and that doesn't really come together in the way that he would like. He seems to always be knocking about for someone to stand at the right hand of, if you will, but not take center stage. Is there a reason? He doesn't run for office himself?
I think that's a great question. I think that he is more interested in sort of, harnessing, his ideas, his ideology, his worldview, and sort of pushing that and creating a movement through someone that can go all the way. And I think he sees the star power of a Sarah Palin. I think at one point he saw the star power of perhaps Michelle Bachmann or even Jeff Sessions, and I think with their powers combined, feels like there could be something achieved here. They could win together. But it's funny. He is not somebody that is drawn to the spotlight, obviously, and is not somebody that certainly does a lot of interviews. So that's been a challenge for many of us.
Right. We don't see him speak in public very often. What are some of the notable times that we did or have been able to see Steve Bannon give a speech or appear in a public way to sort of learn more about how he presents himself and how his mind works?
Well, certainly when he spoke at CPAC this year, right. I think that was a moment in which many of us sort of heard him speak for the very first time. And certainly he very much laid out some major goals, major sort of political goals, and really kind of put the Washington, you know, media and sort of adversaries on notice to say, you know, look, if you think, you know, this is going to be easy to take our government back, I'm here to tell you it is not. We are, you know, we are after dismantling the administrative state. I mean, that's these are, you know, incredibly big ideas. And I also think that it was shortly after this that Steve Bannon was on the cover of Time magazine. And from, you know, our reporting, I mean, this is kind of the key mistake that anyone who is very close to the president can make, which is you can't, you know, you can't draw too much attention away from the boss. This isn't something that he looks upon favorably. And I think what we saw immediately after the CPAC speech, after much of the media attention on Steve Bannon, is that, in fact, you know, there was some, you know, purposeful distance that the president created between himself and Steve Bannon. You know, he's just a guy who works for me. You know, he came in once I'd beat Hillary. Suddenly there was a little bit of rewriting of Steve Bannon's history there.
Is it possible to gauge the influence of Steve Bannon on the president at different times? I mean, can you listen to President Trump and say, right now Steve Bannon has his ear, or right now he hasn't? I mean, can you see the fingerprints there on Trump's policies or on his words in public?
Certainly there's two moments that really stick out. The first is the travel ban, which our film really gets into, which is this idea that the document that was actually put forth on a Friday, without sort of running many of the concepts and basic ideas by even the president's inner circle, right? That this was really a shock and awe approach to ensure that supporters knew that the president was delivering on campaign promises, but also to sort of set a tone, right? That we are here. There's a new sheriff in town, and we're making America great again. And I think that the idea that was, you know, truly a Bannon production is so clear. I mean, from everything we know about him, I mean, the sort of disruption and really kind of off the cuff, you know, moments are signature Bannon. Another moment is, you know, certainly after the second presidential debate, when you know, Bill Clinton's female accusers were brought about in this press conference. I mean, this was something that Steve Bannon produced on the spot with very little notice, and really sort of, you know, kind of transformed the news cycle a bit and created this incredible diversion. And the third would be, you know, the America First speech, the inaugural address. I mean, you know, it's the moment of carnage. That is a Steve Bannon speech. You know, these are key moments of sort of Steve Bannon's fingerprints on a number of policies and then certainly public remarks.
Are these the moments when the president is speaking directly to some of the people who voted for him? How much does Steve Bannon have his finger on the pulse of the folks who are supporters of the president as a candidate and as a president now?
Well, I think what's so interesting is, you know, in diving into Steve Bannon's biography, I mean, when you go back to sort of the early days of his time at Breitbart and you see early political successes he has there of channeling populist anger against, you know, bipartisan immigration reform and you know, the early success that he sees there by covering that issue and ultimately seeing the majority leader lose his seat over it. You know, this is Steve Bannon's bread and butter. It's understanding that populist anger within the GOP base, harnessing it, and creating a larger movement. I think in many ways Steve Bannon knows this, you know, this part of the party much better than the president.
Does the president need him to maintain the support he has among the voters who currently support him? I mean, how important is he to the president going forward?
Well, I'm not sure he has to have him, but I certainly think that you can't fire somebody like Steve Bannon. I think what's more likely to happen, without risking, I think, upsetting that base we're describing, I think what's more likely to happen is that Steve Bannon is perhaps neutralized, or we see him sort of maybe be pushed aside to some degree, but not go anywhere. Because I think what is so critical is ensuring that the president continues to spend that quality time with the base. We saw it at the 100-day mark. The president does not go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. In fact, he goes to an old-fashioned campaign rally, in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And who's on the flight with him? Steve Bannon. And what is the speech? It's truly a speech that's right off the campaign trail. I mean, it's again going to a place where you're amongst supporters, and I think that is a moment in which Steve Bannon will always be able to create and develop for this president. There's a lot of comfort, I think, in having somebody like Steve Bannon very close.
And is he a liability? Is he a, he's often referred to as a firebrand. Is he that in Washington?
I think it depends on how you view the disruption, right? if it's nonstop executive orders, if it's, if it's keeping us all on our toes, and if it's just this, this sort of greater goal of dismantling the administrative state, then I'm not sure he is a liability. Now, if it comes to domestic policy, being stuck in the courts, as we've seen with the travel ban, or certainly healthcare, just being sort of DOA, it's going to be sort of tricky to see what happens next. Part of the idea of us developing this film, in fact, came from the idea that, when presidents do hit a wall with domestic policy, where do they go next? To foreign affairs, to foreign policy. We see the president obviously abroad now with Steve Bannon in tow. I think this is what is coming next. I think in many ways the film is a bit of required viewing before sort of seeing an emerging Trump foreign policy, which is really in many ways a Bannon foreign policy.
Gabrielle Schonder is a producer on Frontline's Bannon's War. You can see it tonight at 9 p.m. Central, 8 Mountain on SDPB TV. Gabrielle, thank you so much.
Thank you.